If you were reading through the Gospel of John, what point would you mark as the great turning point in John's story? Welcome to Probe. I'm Alden Thompson, your host. My conversation partners today are Paul Dibdahl, Bruce Johansson, colleagues in the School of Theology. And we're continuing the story now with a remarkable turning point. What is that turning point?
Well, there's a number of ways in which a person could outline the Gospel of John, but one way that it's kind of a traditional way of looking at it, which I think is helpful, is up through chapter 12, we have Jesus performing seven major signs or miracles. In fact, this initial section is sometimes called the Book of Signs. And the last great sign is the resurrection of Lazarus. And with that resurrection, it's a decisive point where there are a group of people who believe in Jesus, but there are also the Jewish leaders who, that hardens them. They make up their mind at that point, it seems, that Jesus and Lazarus as well must die. Mm-hmm. And, beginning in chapter 13, we're kind of ushered into the second portion of the book of the Passion, mm-hmm. The events there right up before Jesus' crucifixion and resurrection. So this is, it really is a turning point here in the book as we move into chapter 13 of John.
And I think, Paul, you mentioned that section concludes with Mary washing Jesus' feet.
Right. We have the resurrection of Lazarus, and we have Mary washing Jesus' feet, which he says is in preparation for burial. And then here in chapter 13, we have Jesus washing his disciples' feet. So there's this tie-in with what has just gone on before.
Yeah. Now, there seems to be, in this chapter 13, where Jesus washes the disciples' feet, it is such a radical contrast with the Jesus making these outrageous claims in the temple to the Jewish leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Before Abraham was,
I am.
I am.
Yes.
Boom. You see it.
Amazing.
Yeah, amazing stuff. And now, this man who's making all these amazing statements to being the God of the Old Testament, what does this God of the Old Testament do?
He takes on the work of what would be normally a servant. Or, if a servant wasn't present, it would be the woman of the house.
Mm.
You can understand that Peter got upset. You know, they're all sitting there, and they're probably all waiting for somebody to volunteer. I can imagine that it got a little bit uncomfortable in the room. Okay, the pecking order was probably going through people's minds.
Yeah.
And then here Jesus stands up, girds himself, gets the water, gets the towel, whatever it was, and these feet have been walking through the dust of Jerusalem, where donkeys have left their daily remains, and he's going to wash their feet now.
Mm. And yet, as you read the story in John's Gospel here, and John is the only one that mentions the foot washing.
That's right.
It's not mentioned in the synoptics at all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't see a trace of Jesus anything like, well, if you guys won't do this, I will.
Yeah.
There's no touch of that. It's
no.
just simple.
He just gets up and does it.
Does it, yeah.
Another thing that's interesting, if you look at this whole passage, 13:1-30, Judas is mentioned at the beginning, and he's the one that the story focuses on at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think with that kind of context, it even says there that Judas, the devil had already put it into the heart of Judas to betray him. And then comes the foot washing thing,
mm-hmm.
this wonderful act of humiliation, yeah, and service.
We'll come to Judas' story. I want to focus just a bit more, mm-hmm, on Jesus, because for me, as I reflected on this, it is really transformed even my understanding of church. You remember in the synoptics where James and John come asking for the top places in the kingdom?
Mm-hmm.
In some cases they ask for themselves, some cases their mother asks. It's not consistent in all three of them. But Jesus' response there is just, I think, central to understanding,
yeah,
his mission, for he says, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them,
yeah,
and their great ones exercise authority over them. It will not be so among you.
Yeah.
Whoever would be great among you must be your servant.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And whoever would be first among you must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and give his life a ransom for many. This is the God of the universe,
yeah,
who is not demanding that people worship him. He is simply coming to serve.
This is why paradox has become a category for truth for me that is very precious.
Yeah.
Because that, in this world, is paradoxical.
It is.
It's the kingdom turned upside down.
Right.
Earlier on in this series, we talked about the disciples, and we talked about faith and the steps of faith and all. Mm-hmm. I think almost all these disciples, including Judas, were planning on being power brokers when the kingdom came in. They believed in Jesus that he was the Messiah, but it was a belief that was going to make them share earthly power.
When the disciples were unable to heal the epileptic boy, wasn't it because they were discussing who would be greatest?
Yeah. That's right.
Planning ahead.
Planning ahead. See? And it just didn't work.
Yeah.
And Jesus' response in Mark is so amazing. This kind comes out only by prayer.
Hmm.
And not prayer that you can be top of the heap.
Yeah, and servanthood.
Yeah, with the servant. So you have this amazing story of Jesus being served. Now, there's another thing which I think is intriguing here. I think one of the most difficult for us things to do, and you alluded to this already, Bruce, is to be a gracious receiver. In fact, Peter had a hard time with that. Jesus came to serve him. Oh, no.
There are times when it's more gracious to receive than to give.
Yes. And, of course, what Jesus had done when Mary washed his feet, he was a gracious receiver.
Yeah.
See? Mm-hmm. I can't think of any point along the line where Jesus refused gracious gifts. Now, sometimes he challenged people who wanted to come and do things for him. That's because he suspected their motives. But when simple, ordinary people come and wanted to do things for Jesus,
he accepted it.
He accepted it. The children praising him. Disciples, no, he's too important for that. No. Let the children come.
Beautiful.
And even in the triumphal entry, there is a sense that, let them talk. Let them shout. See, it's really marvelous. So I think that Jesus' model here is just a powerful one. Now let's talk about Brother Peter. Peter was, of all people, most self-confident. He knew that he was going to be faithful to his Lord. But what do we make out of this particular story? And maybe we could deal with Peter and Judas here as kind of counterfoils, because there is a conversation with Jesus between Judas, with Judas, and there's also a conversation with Peter.
I'm wondering whether Peter's problem was not so much the receiving as the fact that he might be called upon to do the same thing. Sometimes we don't like to get certain kinds of gifts because they demand us to show the same kind of graciousness, and we don't feel that kind of graciousness.
We'd really rather not.
Yes.
and Jesus clarifies that later on. He does expect his disciples to follow his example.
Very much, yes.
Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them.
In fact, that's the punchline at the end, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah. It reminds me, again, of C.S. Lewis. Mere Christianity's got such a marvelous way. He compares the Christian way to being like an honest man paying his taxes. He just hopes that after he pays his taxes, there will be some left over for the real, for him, see? He knows that there are certain things that he's going to have to do that he wasn't doing before, certain things he's going to have to quit, and he's just afraid when he gets through, there will be no real room for the real him, see?
Yeah.
And Lewis says, the Christian way is different, harder and easier. Christ says, give me all. I don't want so much of your time, so much of your money, so much work. I want you. No half measures are any good. Mm-hmm. I've not come to torment your natural self, but to kill it. It's just amazing.
He really has a wonderful way.
He has a wonderful way with words. And yet that's so clear what he's asking here.
Yeah.
And to the natural man, the unconverted man, this is just horrendous. Want me to wash people's feet?
It's not the parts, as others have said, it's not the parts of the Bible that we don't understand that are most challenging, but the parts that we do.
Yes.
And this is one that seems quite clear.
This is one of them.
That's quite clear.
And yet it's quite challenging.
Yeah. And you know, I really think that in modern practice, because within the Seventh-day Adventist community, we do practice the foot washing. And I will have to admit that it's not one of my favorite activities. It's not the, you know, where I say, oh goody, this week we get to wash feet. It takes genuine spiritual preparation. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that troubles me about having the Lord's Supper on Sabbath morning without warning is that people come without that preparation. Mm-hmm. I know when I was a pastor, we would sometimes have it on a Friday night, and people knew what they were coming for. It was just powerful and beautiful because you had a chance to prepare the heart.
Yeah.
And it can just really be a marvelous experience. Now let's talk about Judas. John's pretty tough on Judas.
He is. And yet, if you listen to Jesus' words to Judas and actions, I think Jesus was still trying to open the door.
Yeah.
I wonder if Judas didn't go about his own way of trying to get the kingdom of earthly power to open up. He did not like, he saw all this miraculous power of Jesus, but he did not like the humility stuff.
Yeah.
And he saw the Jewish leaders turning against Jesus. He felt like somehow he needed to goad Jesus to do the big miracle and come in sweeping power. I've often wondered,
help him along.
I'm wondering if that wasn't part of his motive. Of course, we're trying to read his thoughts, and that's impossible.
But you see, what's really intriguing, and I don't know what to make of this, but if you look at Jesus' actual trial, self-confident Peter denied him, then went out and wept, and he then experienced Jesus' forgiveness.
Yeah.
Judas actually repented, at least on the surface. Yeah. He said, I've done wrong, you see.
Not in the Gospel of John, but...
Not in the John, but you see, it is there in the Gospel account. And I have wondered that if maybe you go to the Old Testament in particular, you have these amazing instances where people condemned to die, or, you know, their end was at least postponed.
Yeah.
God repents when the people repents.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I can't sort out all those bits and pieces of how God's foreknowledge and human repentance. Some people just say, well, God decides it anyway. But if you really believe that God appeals, Jesus was appealing to Judas here.
Perhaps Judas repented of what he did, but was not willing to accept the kind of upside-down kingdom that Jesus... Yeah. And Peter was? Maybe that was the difference.
A person can regret their actions, I think, without repenting.
Yeah.
And that's typically the way that Christians have interpreted Judas.
Understood that concept,
And there's certainly enough evidence in Scripture to suggest that Judas, you might say, richly deserved his fate because he'd chosen it.
We'll leave all those things to God.
We have to leave all of those things to God. And it's amazing, if you read the Old Testament in particular, I've been struck, that we are so often disappointed by the good people who are left behind.
Mm-hmm.
Israel, for example, my choice for king would not be David, but Jonathan. But somehow that didn't work.
Yeah.
One last piece here, and we won't have time to go into it because our time is virtually up, and that is the prayer in John 17. It's included in our study for this time, and we have just a few seconds left here. It is a powerful prayer in which Jesus prays for his disciples that they may be one with his Father. And
he prays for us, too.
He does. Those who would hear who haven't been yet, those who believe in his word. So that's an amazing one. We'll continue on with Jesus' amazing conversation with the disciples next week, but that is a conversation for next week. Paul and Bruce will be with me again. My thanks to Jim Bryson, our program engineer, to all of you for listening in for Pro. I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Pro, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you may call 509-527-2194 or email probe@wwc.edu. Join us again next week at this same time for Probe.